Welcome to Uncovering the Seniors, our podcast about the avant-garde music scene here in Copenhagen. Our guest today is the great Asger Thomsen, a composer and bass player. And we speak with him about his music, the stuff he released this year, and also what he's working on right now, his solo album. And also about things like what we think is the future of live concert streaming on the internet. It's a great conversation with a great musician, so I hope you enjoy. I'm here with my co-host Jan Arne Rones.
Good morning.
My name is Jan Karlreit, and our guest today is the amazing Asger Thomsen.
Good morning.
Welcome to our podcast. Welcome to this new studio. We're not like cheating RMC anymore. we're in a real place. We have our own mics. We're doing stuff. It's great.
It's
an initiation of this new studio place. We have our food. It's awesome. So Asger is, of course, a bass player who plays all kinds of different improvised music. So why don't you... Do you have like 3 projects going now that are very new? Or you have this new like free jazz quintet?
I have a quartet, I just put out a record with this quartet.
And then you released an album also this year with the Moms.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you have 2 records out, new records out today.
I'm working on a solo record now.
So. Oh, yeah.
So are you going to finish it before the end of this?
I have to because of some funding.
The system is forcing you.
The deadline is forcing me to finish it soon.
Yes, that's good. So what's the plan with that solo record?
Well, it's going to be a mix of some prepared bass stuff and some... open improv things, I think.
Okay.
I'm planning to do like a 120 minute piece for the A side, I think. I mean, this is not completely settled yet, but I think it's going to be like a long piece and then maybe 2 or 3 shorter pieces.
And like this is free improvised or will it be like...
I think I'm going to structure it a bit.
Yeah.
I think... For me, I wouldn't really be happy about just putting up a mic and then starting improvising solo. I mean, I've done that a lot, but I feel like then it becomes this never-ending project where I never really settle on anything. So I think for me, it works best to have some kind of loose structures. So it's somewhere between composition and improvisation.
Are you thinking more of textures when you say structuring it, or
no, more like. That I have some idea of where it should go. I mean, I did 2 solo records before, and the first one was very conceptual. I had just discovered this prepared bass universe, and I was really trying to test the limits of that and to stay with one thing for a very long time and so on.
Like one preparation or one texture or one sound or what? But
yeah, like one... Not like one sound, but one, you could say, modus or one thing. I was really going for this static thing, you could say.
It's something, I mean, I know you now for 3 years, I think, and it's something that you've been working on in that time specifically, I thought, really strongly, like preparing the bass using cups, using tools... On the bass, right? Or is that a wrong impression?
Yeah. I've been doing that for a long time, but I guess I really started doing it more intensely since 2016, something like that. Yeah, I found out these sticks that I could prepare the bass with, and then it would allow me to put other preparations on and work with layers in that way without doing overdubbing, but just doing it. With different techniques, you could say. So I was interested in that and see how far I could go with that, like without using electronic effects.
So how did you like start on this like preparation journey? What prompted you to go in that direction?
Well, I guess it's. I mean, the bass is such a physical instrument, so for me it was. Kind of natural to just try to put a stick between a, some strings and see like what would that make, and just you know, just research on these different sounds that it could produce. And but it was actually it was quite concrete when I was, I had a flight to Berlin, and with SAS they give you these small cups, and I just kept it and I tried to put it in between the strings and to bow under it, and it made this really annoying sound.
Awesome.
But quite fascinating, because it was so dynamic, and it had this very really guttural quality to it. And so I decided to see if I could do more with in this, if I could go further in this direction. And I found these what do you call, like strikepinne?
Knitting sticks.
Yeah. And a lot of these, they just don't really work very well. So, but there was one specific type that I used, and then this, the head that it has in the end, it fell off, and then it would just stay like without, because it has a tendency to always like fall down to a side or something like that. But then it could stay quite static without me having to do much.
To adjust it all the time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, and I could use it kind of as a, I would say like a template or something that would stay in and create this constant vibration, and that would allow me to use other sticks and so on to go further with this.
That's interesting. It's like something I've been trying a little bit, but not at the level you've tried, like this small metal clamps on the strings on the guitar, like makes this really like ring modulator-esque sound. And
yeah,
and sometimes putting stuff in, but I think since you have the arch on the bass, it's kind of you and also it's bigger strings and there's more room in between the strings. I guess it's easier to
put a full stick in between than a guitar, yeah, for sure.
To do more, you have more flexibility in things you can thread between,
yeah,
stuff kind of.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
It's really inviting for this, and I mean it's a research thing that I try to do different things and find out, like, to be very, I mean, to find this place between control and something that is really out of control. I mean, you can never, I mean, I can get a pretty good sense of what will happen if I do specific things, but in the end, there's always this element of chaos to it.
Yeah, there's the element of randomness, which is, you never really know what the sound will be like, because you will never put it in the exact same way and the exact
and
you won't all necessarily be in the same place on the bass or the instrument.
Exactly, yeah. And it's really, it's like you change it, you move one clamp like a millimeter and it changes completely. So there is this, but when you have this awareness of that there is this randomness, you can also play with that you know that there is this factor also in play.
Yeah, I think that's part of the why it's exciting, because the instrument, like you spend all this time learning the instrument, and then it becomes like solved in some way. It's not solved, but like this traditional way of playing it, you know, you have clearly what to expect from when you do something, and then suddenly you have a new universe which you don't know, and you have more trouble replicating it, which is why it probably lends itself very well to improvising.
I mean, when you started it years ago, was it that, like, because it sounds a little bit like you're not concerned of finding the perfect sound, but rather like having a certain approach to sound?
Well, I guess there was different phases to the thing. I mean, when I found it, I felt like this could go into, I mean, this would be something that I could develop some kind of a solo language for the double bass, and so I wanted to work on that. And then in the beginning, I guess you find a new sound and you're just excited about this. Wow, this is a new sound. There's this element of excitement there, but then at some point, you also, I mean, for me at least, I go into this more perfectionist mode where I really want to learn it and to master it somehow.
Okay, yeah.
So, because I mean, it doesn't keep on being that exciting to with the sound, you also get bored with it, or you want to, then you get frustrated, and it doesn't really work the same way, like when you try to reproduce it. So
yeah, when you said with the millimeter, so you think you know the position of the clamp, but 1 millimeter off, and it's not exactly how you wanted it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But so, just asking, like, more from a philosophical point, if it would be possible, would you think you would go for the perfect alternate sound, so to say, or like extended sound, prepared sound, and then would love to play with that all the time, or because we were speaking about this randomness that you really like to it.
Mm.
So I'm just
I don't think that would interest me so much to find a perfect sound. I like it also as a process where it's you're kind of battling this impossible instrument a bit. I think that's
double bass in general. impossible instrument.
Yeah, you could say playing the double bass is kind of like a battle between man and machine.
The early Renaissance battle of man-machine.
It's a stupid instrument.
I think most instruments are like stupid in some sense.
Drums are awesome. Just saying. Best instrument ever.
like it's like everything you get too deep into, you start realizing how dumbly it's created. But you don't have a solution. You're just annoyed about how dumb it is.
I also like, I like putting the strings a little bit higher, so there is this tension that you there is this risk of failing completely.
But did you ever, like, for example, there's Joel Illehag here in Copenhagen that built a complete new thing, was that ever a thought, or is that's going too far for you or whatever? Or
I think I'm too lazy to do something like that.
Yeah,
and I don't have the skills at all to build an instrument. Yeah, I haven't really given that so much thought to go in this direction.
That's just a side
thought. Also, there's some energy in accepting the structure. I guess like you accept the structure even though it annoys you, but you accept the structure and work with it. So like it's like having a, like some say it's in some sense like an instrument is already made dogma. Like this is. This is your dogma. You play the dogma drums or the dogma bass or electric guitar, the dogma.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's exactly what you're challenging, right, Oscar? Like, with preparations and extended techniques. And.
But then also for a while, I felt very, like, conceptual about that. I want to stay only, I wouldn't want to use any conventional sounds at all. I wanted to stay away from that and see if I could make the bass into something completely unrecognizable as an instrument. But then, on the other hand, I also practice a lot of like conventional techniques. So at some point, I was also a little bit unsatisfied with this mindset. So I guess I'm trying to find some middle ground or some balance between using the whole palette. I don't see why I should limit it to only prepared sounds.
Which brings us to your newly released CD, or like the last one. You use extended techniques and traditional techniques on that, right?
The one with the moms?
On the Autolysis.
Autolysis. Yeah.
What does that word mean? I'm sorry, I don't.
It's like a cell that degenerates from within by itself.
Okay.
It's something from biology.
Yeah, no wonder I don't know about it.
I don't know that much about it either.
I like words.
Yeah.
But can you speak a bit about that album?
Yes. So that's a quartet. It was kind of I wanted to have this more like free jazzy quartet, but also where I could mix like my compositions with completely free improvisation. And because I like this to try to find this middle ground between free improv, like you could say from the more European Derek Bailey, Peter Kowald tradition, and also this more American free jazz, maybe you could say, to try to mix that up somehow.
Yeah.
So the compositions are they're quite strict in a way. I mean, but they're more like short written things, and then there's these completely open improvisations. But sometimes I also give a direction that we should maybe explore this type of improvisation, stuff like that. So it's a little bit condensed in a way.
Huh. That sounds great. I mean,
what kind of direction do you like? Like a mood, or is it like sets of notes, or how concrete or how abstract is it?
It's quite concrete. When I try to give as little information as possible, but it's different from track to track. But on one piece, there is a theme, and then I wanted to go into this very fragmented sort of improv thing, but then at some point I asked Jonas to take over and then to pick it up and go into a more like a narrative sort of free jazzy way of playing.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's Jonas Engel on saxophone.
Yes.
Simon on drums, right?
Simon Forkham on drums and
Niklas
Veit on guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a lot about energy, that quartet, I would say. Mm. Mm.
What kind of so you do you like channel the energy like in, is it like a random energy, or is it, do you have like a, I don't know what my question is, it's kind of like how, because it's about energy, but what type of energy, or can you elaborate somehow if that makes sense? I don't know.
I guess it's just a matter of the players. There's everybody has their preferences, and I think we are all going for this more like a very very dynamic type of improvising, and you could say to like try to keep this intensity going, like it's quite high intensity all the time almost. But that's of course also a kind of vague term, because it can be silent and intense at the same time.
Yeah.
So yeah,
the only thing to find out is to listen to the album.
You have to listen to
you have to
maybe it's yeah
and
it's I mean, just shamelessly plugging it right now, it's on Bandcamp is the best way to find it, or
yeah, it's a vinyl, but you can find it on Bandcamp. I haven't really decided yet if I wanted to put it on stream on Spotify and so on.
Yeah. But I mean, like, if people want to buy the vinyl, they can also do that through the Bandcamp.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just your name, right? Your channel, or
yeah, it's released at the Elliot Cardinals label, the Bodily Press.
Yeah.
So, but you can just search it and you will find it.
Yeah, there's a lot of other music there as well, yeah, on exactly. Your Bandcamp.
Yeah.
Like, all your music is on Bandcamp, isn't it?
I think almost all of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I mean, speaking of the label from Elliot, you also recorded one album with him.
We did several albums, actually.
Several albums, yeah.
Yeah, there is the latest one is called Our Hearts as Thieves.
Yeah,
and we actually did two albums. So we did a tour in January, where we went to Cologne and recorded some stuff there, and it came out this year also. Digitally. It's with Jonas Engel also and Etienne Nielsen on drums.
Beautiful.
So it's quite this abstract thing between, he has his abstract poetry and we play abstract music and it meets somewhere.
And I think he has such a great voice reading the poetry.
Yes.
It's him, right? Like,
yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Because I mean, I think it sounds so good.
Because he plays piano and reads
the poems, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Is that mostly his project, or is that like a collaboration project?
I would say it's a collaboration.
Yeah. It's nice. But
you started it with him when you were in the States on a workshop, right? And I mean, he came here for, or is that right? Like, if I remember reading it,
I met him in Boston when I was on a trip there with Kristen and Kasper Tranberg, and he had organized some concerts there.
Yeah, okay.
And so I invited him over when I was still studying.
Yeah,
and we did some concerts and also recorded an album there.
I think that's the one I listened to.
It's called Magpie.
It's with Hoy on drums.
Yeah, we used this on drums. Yeah. It's a piano trio thing.
With poets.
With poems.
With poems. Yeah.
With poems.
With
poems.
Poets.
Yeah, it was an interesting.
Hemingway is like coming. Oh no.
Good is chilling in the corner. Yeah.
It's a good one. Sleeping with Giants is the name of that.
I
haven't had a chance to listen to it, but I had a chance to listen
it's
to
super
the
beautiful.
Yeah. Had a chance to listen to The Moms yesterday.
Oh yeah.
That's also released. Is that a live recording or is that a studio recording?
It's recorded just at my rehearsal space actually.
Yeah.
Okay. It was the first meeting I had this idea that it would be a cool trio with Taos and Albert.
Yeah.
And so we agreed on this meeting and we just immediately put up some microphones, and this is actually the first time we ever played together.
Awesome.
We recorded.
Yeah, and it's just one stretch, right?
No warm-ups. One stretch, yeah. We did some other recordings, but this one, the thing we released was the first one we did.
Mm. That's perfect. Like, true spontaneity. Yeah, it's really, that's a really static and textural, right?
Yeah, I guess that was a bit conceptual in the way that I had spoken at least a little loosely with Taos about staying with one, or like, I think we spoke about it as a trio a little bit, that we should try to stay with one sound for as long as possible. But it didn't take long before, I mean, I don't think it was like a strict concept at like that. We just, that was the initial idea, and then it just went where it went.
Yeah. Thank you. But
yeah.
That's also really, sometimes that's a good thing, right? You just like, you start somewhere and then whatever, like that's part of it.
Yeah. I think I need this freedom when I play it. I don't really stay in one.
Yeah. I think that's one of the thing I like the least is when if someone writes music and they say like, yeah, please play with these pitches or, oh, it's these notes. Like,
but be free.
Yeah. But be free. Then I'm like, I don't care. And then I just play whatever I want. Like, I can't relate to that. I think it's such a, are you like, because if you want to create some sort of continuous narrative, phrasing is also that the phrasing is similar is probably more important than the actual notes, I think.
Yeah.
And then when you just give someone a random notes, then it just sounds random notes. I don't know. I guess this is one of my annoyances, I guess.
I guess also if you start questioning why these notes, and you don't really get it, why there is this limitation, then it becomes a bit frustrating.
Yeah, then the intention behind it is, I mean, then you're just playing frustration. <on
the instrument. laughs> I don't like this.
Which
I
maybe don't is cool. Like
this. Yeah, it's a bad type of frustration. Not this like, I can do it, but it's more like, fuck this. Don't give me this stuff. I never got that, but it's one of the things. And maybe I don't need to get it. Maybe someone else will get it.
I mean, you spoke about that when you ask musicians to play with you, like, for example, for your quartet now with Jonas, Simon and Niklas, you want them also to, like you said, they have their own style and you try to bring that in. Do you, like, when you wrote these compositions, were you strongly thinking about them and trying to set them up to the best possible expression, or was it more like the compositions were there and then?
Yeah, I think normally I don't really think so much about in that way, but for this specific project I was trying to make something for these specific players. I definitely had that in mind. I cannot really be so concrete about it, I guess, but I had some idea about it. I mean
you were thinking of them while composing and while defining the project, right? Like, you were thinking of these people, or
yeah. I did.
I would like to ask you a bit about like your life in the scene here, in the music scene in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
Or like, would love if you could speak a bit about that, because from my impression, you're really integral part by now, or you're like a big part of it. And I mean, you were studying at the RMC until how many years ago?
I've finished in 17.
17, 3 years.
Yeah, so okay. I took the bachelor in Esbjerg.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Which is on the West Coast. Yeah, so, yeah, then I moved here in, what was it, 2013?
Okay, so 7 years in the town, yeah.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, and of course, when you move to a new town, you don't know so many people. It's a bit up the hill. So
yeah.
I think it was good for me to study at RMC, to meet people there.
Mm.
Yeah. What was the question?
But then, at that time, 13, like the 5E was already happening and stuff, or did that come later?
I think it started. Right, I think it started a bit later, like a year or two after us.
Yeah,
I don't remember. So, but it was so small in the beginning. It was just the people around the conservatory who were going listening to each other's concerts.
Nice.
And it was really hard to get in. You had to go through this fence, this hole in the fence, because they hadn't really opened Köppen yet.
Oh, really?
So you had to.
I mean, I heard about that.
Through this
never...
hole in the fence.
Yeah.
Okay, when I came, everything was already paved.
And sometimes the door was closed.
Yeah. It was really. There was also this door. Yeah.
Yeah, but door in the fence.
Yeah, there was also a door in the fence, but there was this hole as well that you had to go through if that
like
door was closed.
With your instrument and stuff.
I guess. But I mean, yeah, it was really wild in the beginning.
Yeah.
And now it's not wild at all.
I mean, the music still remained wild.
That's true. But now there's no music. Mm. It's only children's birthdays and stuff there.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
But so when you came, did you already in Esbjerg play like free improvised or like European improvisation of music, or?
I was definitely interested in it, but I didn't really play it so much with people there.
Yeah.
There was not so many people who were like-minded, I guess, in Esbjerg. So yeah, that was a bit frustrating in a way too. I mean, it was nice to come to Copenhagen and find people who had more of the same mindset, you could say. Yeah. So
it was mostly like standards and modern New York jazz over there when you...
Yeah, I was also composing my own stuff.
Yeah, I mean, but also with the other, like the general vibe there, but also your, I guess, both are interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite mixed, I would say.
Okay.
People with very different... backgrounds and interests. But I guess there was not so much people who were interested in completely free improvisation.
But that was quite strongly here when you came to RMC, right? Like in those years already, or did that I have a little bit the feeling that right now the wave is going down a bit again in RMC, that there's now more songwriters, so to say.
Okay,
but
I lost a bit the feeling of it since I graduated. I don't really know how it is anymore.
But I had the feeling there was this high point of like a big percentage of the school really wanted to do free improvised music a couple of years ago, maybe.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I didn't see enough graduation concerts this year to like get a feeling because of the restrictions.
Yeah, it was difficult.
Yeah.
But to come back, like, so when you came to Copenhagen and you already knew you wanted to do this.
Yeah, actually, I started almost immediately to set up some concert series. I had a friend who had a gallery at that point in Nyhavn, and we found out we could do concerts there. So we just started making a concert series, actually.
Awesome, yeah.
And it was quite nice. We went on for some time and... made a small festival in the jazz festival and put up some pretty cool gigs actually.
So who were the people you were playing with then mostly?
I know I was playing with Jeppe Seeberg and Rune Lose and And then I made this quintet with them and Thomas Dabrowski and Henrik Milby.
Wonderful.
That's you released an album. Huh? You released an album with that band, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah. That was the, you could say, the one of the projects from when I started in RMC. I was doing that as an album, as a project, kind of.
Yeah. That's more American esque, free, modern, actually, free jazz ish.
Yes, it was actually a lot of, most of those compositions were something I had written when I was still in SBI.
Yeah.
And I somehow couldn't really find the right band to play that music. So for me, it felt already like a bit old somehow, the material. But I had this idea of composing something, of bringing something more like strict or like formal, or how you say, like conventional composition, and to make like some more free improvising musicians play that and see what would happen.
So that's that. Or did you make more albums with them, or is it just?
There's just this one album. Yeah.
That's something Puli something. What's it?
Puli Velende Hjelm.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Sorry, that was so quick for me.
Oh, it's a very stupid word.
Okay.
Is that something with a helmet? I don't know what Puli Velende
means. Yeah, something that can like subtract itself and like adjust.
Predicted this blowing helmet.
I found out afterwards. It's actually a thing. There is something with a helmet that can, you know, adjust its. I didn't know.
Never do research, guys.
It was something I knew from I read it in a novel. There was something with a polyvalent yem.
Okay.
A home.
Yeah.
That was polyvalent. That it was some idea. And. And then it just became a helmet instead of a home.
Yeah, that's great.
But it's kind of nonsensical in a way, I guess.
Well,
or maybe it's not.
Maybe it's both.
When you think about it, maybe it makes a bit sense in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can project a lot of meaning onto it, I think.
Yeah.
At least what I understood from the title in English.
Yeah. But you've been hosting different concert series and stuff like continuously, haven't you? Like,
I feel like we have to do that.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, if nobody does it, it's not gonna happen.
Mm.
It's actually true.
That's also the beauty of this scene or this music that we play, that it doesn't really require much else than just a empty room where people don't complain too much about the noise. And then do you have a scene?
Yeah, that's right. That's actually
people
true.
Are willing to just play for peanuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
Which is maybe a problem and maybe not. It's both, right? It's great and it's not great.
Yeah, it's like it's really hard to kill, but it's also really hard to make it really happen.
And it's hard, like, you can't live off of peanuts unless you're some like very serious Buddhist monk or something.
Yeah. But there's quite good possibilities to apply for funding and so on.
Yeah.
Of course we all do that, but it's also a lot of work, and you can easily become tired of doing that.
But I mean, like, there's even now that 5E closed, there are still some places where you get paid and where you can do stuff. Like, I mean, Club Premi, for example, right? But or sometimes some concert kicking stuff, but yeah, I mean,
you're doing this once a month now, right? Like Absolute Music, or is it one Sunday a month? Or more?
Right now it was like whenever we try to do it, like maybe once or twice a month, and so we, since 5E closed, me and a guy called Marcus, who's also volunteering at the concert kicking, We decided on trying to do something at Concert King instead, and because we spoke with Bjorn about this, and so we just took the dates whenever it was possible, because it's also quite booked.
Yeah.
So we just see whenever we can fit it in, and try to make it roughly like once or twice a month. Right at the moment, we're applying for money, so we try to be able to pay the musician some kind of a fee.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a lot of work also.
But what's the musical direction of that?
I mean, we focus on improvised music mostly, so the form is more that it's two or three concerts. We try to keep it like two concerts, like from 8 o'clock, and then we have this like an open session or a jam session, if you will, afterwards. So, I mean, we cannot do like 6 concerts like in 5e and pay our own musicians a tariff that would just not make any economical sense at all.
No.
So what we try to do, because we want to not just make it another concert series. So we want to have to see if we could keep some of this community spirit a bit. So we encourage people to come and just play, and we can offer them a free entrance if they want to do it. I mean, that's... So we hope that people will just come and play. If they have some material they want to try out for an audience, they're welcome to do that. Or maybe play a little improvisation as in a new constellation or something like that.
Yeah. Meet new people.
Meet new people.
Maybe your best friend is playing bass in the open session. Who knows? It's the future. It's hard to predict.
Yeah,
it's really cool. We did it like, when was it? Like a couple of weeks ago? Two weeks ago? That was the first one?
We did the first one in the beginning of August, right? And now we have the next one in the 19th.
Yeah.
It's going to be a killer lineup.
Yeah, who's on that lineup?
We actually just got a... It was supposed to be just the two concerts. One is a duo with Lotte Anker and Simon Toldam. And the other is a duo with Rune Kielsgaard and Nis Bystel. Mm. And now we just got asked from Jesper Søjden and Jakob Andersgaard and Anders Vestergaard from this trio. Because they have a record release. So we put them in. So they will start the evening at 7.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's a real lineup.
Yeah.
People should go and check that out.
So there's 3 concerts and then there's this open session thing.
Mm. Mm. 19th of September, you said?
Yeah. So
next week?
Sunday. Yeah. Most of the dates are Sundays.
Yeah.
I mean, there might also be other, but yeah. Mm. It's been going on for a while. It started just as me and Taus Olesen, the guitar player. We started doing just super DIY concerts in Mayhem and called it Absolute Music. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, blah, blah, blah. And, but now, now it's, we see how it goes. We try to make it a bit more professional, so to say, or like with a bit more economy.
Yeah, that's always the rough part, the economy.
Yeah.
But wonderful that you aim for that. I mean, as Christian also wrote in his statement about 5E closing, he was hoping that some other stuff will spring up or pop up. And
yeah, I have a feeling that if we don't get funding, people will still be wanting to play for just on the door. And so, I mean, let's see. But
yeah, I mean, like, you just need a place to try stuff, right, in front of an audience and to play. And
yeah,
so I think that's super important.
Yeah, listen to the freshest kind of music, which is the
shit possible,
live stuff, like sometimes like frozen meat is good, but like straight from the cadaver, like that's where what you need sometimes, like the improvisation is bleeding and you're just stuffing it in your mouth like
I hope people will come and take some bold risks also and just play with somebody, and maybe it will not work out the best way, but it's gonna be interesting anyway. So yeah
encourage everyone to come to do it. It's cool.
Let's speak a bit more about your music, maybe. We spoke about the mumps. We spoke about the word I cannot pronounce from biology.
Ozolysis.
And we spoke about your stuff with Elliot.
Yes.
You also released an album last year. Was it like for Live from Mayhem with the Taos and
yeah.
and the two two classical strings?
Oh, yeah.
Are
yeah.
they Uda and
That's
Mika?
That was just a completely free improvised
yeah.
concert. Yeah.
Was that from Absolute Music as well?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Probably. Probably, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's more like, I don't know, if you could say somewhere between improvised music and new music, or like this more like classical direction. I guess it's mostly just because of the instrumentation, like the cello and the viola, and it makes it sound a bit more like classical playing without a drummer. But it really opens up for to work with dynamics in another way. I
think Taos does his best to make it not sound so classical on that album.
Like a very very strange string courses.
if you can't like blame him for sounding very classical.
What a unique player.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's doing a lot. There's a lot of feedback stuff from him on that record, isn't there? And then there's a lot of bowing from you also.
Yes. Yeah.
If I remember.
Yeah.
Correctly.
Yeah, it's a while ago since I listened to that, but yeah. It was also just very self-produced. I just put on some microphones and with the Zoom and.
But you do that a lot, right? Like, I mean, you also spoke about the moms, like recording just in your rehearsal room, just first time meeting. Let's set stuff up.
Yeah, it's so easy. I mean, was just a Zoom that has four inputs, and you have a few good microphones, and then you can make pretty decent recordings. I'm not a kind of guy who cares so much about sound quality.
Yeah.
I like good sound quality, of course, but sometimes a live recording has something else that. And then it's maybe worth the compromise.
Yeah, I totally agree. Sure.
Sometimes bad sound is good sound also. It's confusing. Like sometimes also, really shitty, like bootleg Charlie Parker is good, right?
Yeah. I mean, what do you mean? Like free jazz with a lot of compression on the drums?
More
That's
reverb.
The shit, man.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also this question, like, why do we record and release improvised music? I mean, so few people will listen to it, and like maybe it's more about documentation. Just
yeah, we're creating our own Wikipedia page of our town or ourselves.
I mean, for me, it's also this thing about if you never release, because it's so easy to say like, yeah, it has to be in the moment and everything, right? And if you then never record and release anything, then I think it's also somehow for myself. Speaking just for myself, it feels like it's not the full package of being a musician then. And if sometimes then people ask me, oh, you're a musician, like if I meet someone new and they ask me, what do you do? And I say, I'm a musician. And if they say, okay, what can I listen to? Then you have to give them something, right?
Yeah.
I think it's...
Yeah.
I think if you then say, actually, I don't have anything released.
Yeah.
It's like, are you a real musician then even? Like, it's just for myself, I need that.
Yeah.
Or for the structures of society.
it's kind of a neurotic thing, right? That you're never better than your last concert. And then, I mean...
yeah.
There's an element of that also, in a way. That if you're constantly, like... Your ego is so depending on your last concert. And then, but then you need to have some sort of documentation somehow of the good moments also.
So you should record every concert and whenever it's a good one.
So you can, quick. When you play a bad concert, then you can listen back to a good one and you can feel a little better about yourself again.
I have to try that.
Or just put everything on like a obscure radio that no one listens to.
Imse.
Self-plug, horrible.
Awesome.
Yeah, but it is weird that like we're so it's all about the moment, but then you record it and spend like so much time preparing
until
it and then it's
out,
like
yeah.
And then you pester yourself with this recording that you of yourself and you try to make it what it and then it's like it's definitely not the moment anymore. What is the moment? The moment is gone, but there is, I guess there are moments in it, but like
like. I mean, like, even if you listen to a recording that's, like, 20, 30 years old, you can still feel the moment. And, of course, you have a different perspective on it than when you were there, but I still think it can be life-changing to listen to that, right? Like, I mean, I think everyone thinks that. But,
somehow...
like, for example, when I bought this book that's lying over there. That is a collection of some underground magazine articles from the scene in London. And I read through some stuff and it sounded super interesting. And then I was like, okay, I want to listen to this music. And then I couldn't find anything of that specific lineup, for example, you know? Mm. And that was also, that was a bit, I mean, yeah, they were in the moment, I guess. But I mean, I would have also liked
but to. But the magazine is also not in the moment.
No, on so, the magazine so you're totally trying, not even so, on anymore.
So you, when you're trying, I guess, so then it's about documentation again, more probably.
Yeah, but I'm not a historian, right? Like, I don't give a damn about like, oh, this happened in that year and whatnot, but I really care about good music. And I mean, like, if you make good music, I think it's so good to record it and be able to share it with people that are I think you all agree, right? Like, it's like,
I think we should, I think the next level of like is like you play in the moment and then you record free improvised and then you record it. But you don't release the recording. You transcribe it to paper, and then you sell the book as like this, like the like you sell the notation like as.
I think Schoenberg would have liked that.
Yeah, right? this is the next. So you can buy it and play on your piano at home. This is the piano version of of the moms.
Oh yeah.
But, I mean, I spoke with Ole Mofia once that while we were still both studying at the RMC, and he was recording something in a room, and I met him in the hallway, and he said, like, yeah, we record it, then we give it to this specific plant, vinyl plant, that presses it tomorrow, and we play a concert tomorrow evening, and we'll sell the limited edition, I think, like 50 copy vinyl there.
Mm.
And I mean, that's insanely quick, right? Like, it was also a specific pressing plant and whatnot, but and that one doesn't exist anymore, because I thought that's such a great idea, I want to do that as well, and they closed down at the end of that year. But I thought that was so cool, and that's as close as it gets, I guess.
You can stream it live over the internet.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the fastest, but then somehow, like, I can't, but then people need to go to your web page, and that's, and they tend to go to Facebook or YouTube instead.
But you can stream on Facebook.
Yeah, but they're not necessarily clicking on. They're just like seeing the pictures of their friends having babies instead. Oh, next baby.
I'm personally not into watching streams. I don't know why.
No.
It's really not my thing. But listening to LPs is much more my thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Listening to zeros and ones from the internet.
No, I mean, like, I don't know,
album.
Digital music, but
yeah, the long playing format, the best format.
But there was a lot of talk about that in the beginning of this whole Corona thing, that this is going to be like the next thing, that people are going to stream concerts. But do you think that?
I think in some genres, like techno stuff, and like, because there is like watching Twitch and stuff, I think a lot more people are checking out like Deadmau5 streaming or something like that, like,
okay,
but he creates a beat or whatever he does, necessarily a concert, but he, as he's working, which is, it's smart for him, and like, he can earn money.
But maybe also with electronic music, you can make, like, you can stream better sound quality.
Sure. Yes.
I think, I mean, if you're a big fan of an artist and that artist suddenly does like acoustic. Like, let's say you're a big fan of some pop star and they suddenly do like an acoustic unplugged version live stream on the internet. I think that gets a lot of attention and people really like to watch that.
Mm.
But if it's some underground stuff, I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it's almost not worth the hassle about it, you know?
I mean, a big part of going to a concert is also like the hang afterwards. And you share this experience, and when you stream, you just, now you close the window and then you go out of your in your kitchen and you make coffee.
I mean, most people do that while having the stream on, right? Like, they have shitty MacBook speakers or whatever, and then they go out of the room, come in again and stuff. It's like a totally different thing. Yeah. It's more like a background. And I mean, there is a space for that, and it's cool if people want to do that. It's just, I don't think it's the future of live music. I really don't think that.
I mean, not in not it's not the future in the way it is right now. like some form of it, I think. But it will it will transform into something that we don't necessarily recognize as now. But I don't think what we have available of technology right now is not the future of live music.
I think if I would be really rich, I would and have all the possibilities on earth with the with the momentary, like the
Jan Bezos.
Yes, Jan Bezos. If I would be Jan Bezos, then I would invite my favorite bands, but with like multiple camera setup, and then program make someone. Obviously, I wouldn't do it myself. Yeah. I would make someone program a website in a way that you could actually go through the camera perspectives and sit behind the drummer, stand behind the bass player, and whatnot. Right, like for some music, that would be, I think, interesting. I'm not speaking about avant-garde jazz or something, but if you see the Foo Fighters and you could like look over their shoulders and be part of the room and stuff like that, and have like a multi-dimensional experience online, I think that would grab a lot of attention and would be really cool. But
probably it also probably exists, don't
you know? Yeah, possible.
I don't know.
But then even if you then do multiple microphonic setup where you also hear different from the positions. I mean, it's all possible, right? Yeah. But
yeah,
I mean, that's an expensive, complicated setup.
Yeah, I think that the main problem for me with the live streaming music is that you lose the physical aspect of it, because I'm sitting in my apartment and I can play kind of loud, but I mean, I can't kill. If I listen to noise music, that's such a, like harsh noise is so physical. So you can't really, it's not the same on a live stream, because you have your headphones and this part of your head vibrates. Gut, right? Which is why it's so, but yeah, that's what the interesting part of it is. That's what you lose most apparent or whatever.
Yeah. So you're saying if everyone would get electronic devices that you can put all over your body, that would stimulate your body.
Yeah. But you would use that for other stuff as well, not only noise music. The stimulating part.
I can feel the bass in my belly.
Yeah. I think this is being developed by some tube sites, I think. maybe not avant-garde tube. Maybe that's what we should make.
That's IMSA, right? Like IMSA should be that. You should call it IMSA tube. Maybe IMSA tube.
Somehow it also just takes away this complete like the mystery of playing music, like
tube,
like this idea of that we can figure it out what going to a concert is, and then we can just
emulate it digitally.
And then we can emulate artificial ways. And then people will have like exactly like one-to-one the same experience. Oh, we need the smell. Like let's fix that. Oh, we need.
Yeah. So everyone can stay the rest of their life just in their cube, in their flat.
Or in their Borg cube.
And emulate going out 24/7. You get artificial sunlight.
But at least you're not spreading corona that way. It has plus sides, guys. We'll feel a bit draconian.
We need also the danger of spreading corona.
Oh, no. It's getting too real.
Suddenly you end up with the Matrix.
But
this
then
is the Matrix.
Yeah. But who is Neo? Or? Who is Neo?
Who will be Neo?
Avant-garde Neo.
Okay.
I think that's good. Like,
so, sorry, you wanted to finish that point? No, yeah. So you have the concert on the you're not playing on the 19th then, but you will do in the improvisation afterwards, possibly.
Possibly, yes.
Possibly.
I hope so. Yeah. If somebody wants to play with me, I'm always up for it.
There will be people. I'm really sure.
Yeah. I try to bring my bass and be ready if somebody.
Is there a drum set set up?
Yeah, Concert King has everything. Like there's piano.
Yeah, true.
Amps. Yeah. Maybe not a guitar. I don't know.
Who needs a guitar?
Yeah.
Right, Janada?
You don't need guitar.
is there, I mean, I know it's a difficult question to ask right now, but is there more concerts coming up for you right now? Or
Yes, right now I'm playing some concerts with Mia Dubeck, her trio. So we have this nature concerts. We did two already, in one in Kolding and one in Svendborg, and now we do the last one in Helsingør, which is I forgot the date. It's like, I think it's the 26th maybe or something like that.
Yeah,
like not next week, but the week after. Yeah.
People can find out where best if they want to follow you and
follow me or
the project. Yeah, or
I have a webpage, askerthompson.com, which I never update, but I was just thinking about I should maybe update it soon. So yeah, I try to put my concerts in there.
Okay, but they should look for Mia Dubeck's for this specific Helsingør concert. People should look there. Yeah,
it's like an outdoor thing, isn't it? There's a bit of it's a bit of a concept.
Yeah. There's this walk. So there's four different concerts and they're 15 minutes each.
That's short. Yeah.
So people get divided into these smaller groups and then you take a walk and you listen to the first concert for 15 minutes and then you go to the next one and so on.
So beautiful. Yeah. That's also why it's in good locations, huh?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. It's outdoor locations. Yeah.
Have you been at the location already in Helsingør or?
No, not yet. Mm. And then there is the next thing, I think, is a concert in Mayhem on the 22nd of October. I play in a quartet with John Lipscomb and Ona Kielsgaard and Henrik Melby. So you can also check that out.
Beautiful.
Cool. If you want to check out Absolute Music, the series, you can just go to facebook.com/absolutemusic. CPH.
Ooh.
Wonderful. I think that's all the plugins. Plugins, needed, right? The plugs.
All the plugins. Reverb, more reverb. Yeah, it's great.
Thank you very much for being here. Yeah. Thanks for the conversation.
Thank you for the invitation.
Awesome.
And come online next time again to listen to the next episode of Uncovering the Seniors.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ciao.
Snack, snack, snack.